Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC, cable channel 20, and everywhere at wioxradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
It's going good. There's a beautiful day outside.
Yes, it is. It's magnificent out there, John. Leaves are thinking about coming out. Where I am, down in central Ulster County, the leaves are half out.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's flowering?
What's flowering? I don't know. There's a lot. Well, the lilacs are just starting to come out. My peaches were out and got frosted. They're dead. The Asian pears were flowering. They're dead. And now the apples are starting to flower, so that's good.
You think they'll make it?
I think some of the apples will get zapped, but most of them are not out yet. And up here, they're not out.
In Delaware County here, my house, I don't have they're clustering. It's starting to open up, but I think they're safe. Tonight it's going to get pretty chilly, though, but after tonight is, I don't see a freezing night in the long term.
No?
Not for the next 10 days that I saw, unless... I'm looking at the wrong weather area.
I think you're right.
But in the woods, I found this biggest patch of leeks I think I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah?
You could see a little bit from the road, but when you walk out into it, it's many acres large. Usually you find a patch that's, you know, quarter acre is a good patch.
Yeah.
This just goes and goes and goes, and it's nothing but the best looking, beautiful sugar maple timber you've ever seen.
So where is it? No, I'm just kidding.
It's a great site. It's in western Delaware County, I'll tell you that.
All right. Wow, western Delaware County. All right. What are you doing out there?
I had to...
it's not normal.
Take care of a beaver.
Oh. I figured it was something different.
It was different, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm licensed to deal with... I have a nuisance wildlife, a control operator's license for New York State. So I took a look at a beaver problem.
Yeah, because we don't usually go in them parts.
Nope.
You know?
No, did it on my day off and this weekend.
Yeah. I don't know. On my day off, just been doing tree work and, you know, dumping trees for people. For some reason, I had two people that wanted northern white cedars dropped around their house. Isn't that weird? How often do you ever see northern white cedars that are big enough that where they need to be felled?
Four in Roscoe on a property I've seen recently, but.
Okay, well, there you go.
we were convinced they were planted, obviously.
Oh, yeah. No, they're planted.
They're in a perfect L shape, but you wouldn't know it now. Just driving by, it looks like they're in the middle of the woods.
No, no kidding.
Yeah, the only indicator was there was an aspen tree towering over them. I said that just proves it was abandoned in full sunlight at one time.
Yeah. Yeah, northern white cedar don't grow around here. Not to be confused with eastern red cedar, the one that smells really fragrant with the red heartwood. But other than that, I don't know. Been messing around with deer hide.
How's it going?
Well, I just put it in chicken poop yesterday to acidify it. We're not going to go into why you do that. But
lovely.
It's lovely stuff. I got to take it out tonight. Not looking forward to it. Don't worry. By the time everything's done, it'll be completely disinfected. You can do whatever. You know, you could even chew on it and you wouldn't get sick. But right now, I would not chew on it.
No. Might be worse than COVID, right?
Yeah, definitely. But tonight's topic is Super Splitter, the original kinetic log splitter with owner Paul McCann. He is the owner of Super Splitter, Inc., and he owns the patent on the original kinetic wood splitter since 1978. And let me see if I can get him on from Massachusetts. Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. So where are you calling from?
Thanks for having me. West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. It's about 30 miles south of Boston.
Yeah. Now, did you say 30 miles west of Boston?
South of Boston.
Oh, south of Boston. How's the weather out there?
Very nice. Tomorrow's going to be even better. It's been pretty nippy spring after a mild winter, so this is the first good stretch of weather we've had in a while.
How are the buds doing and whatnot? They out?
Yeah, they're starting. The closest I get to them is on the golf course, so that's.
Yeah.
I noticed that they still are a little sparse out there, so I think we're having a late spring because it just took a long time to warm up. But I'm not, very knowledgeable about the trees and arborists. I'm more of the mechanical end of things.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So speaking of that, so you invented the kinetic wood splitter. What's the deal?
No, it was invented by Francis Xavier Graney, which was why the original company was FXG.
Yeah.
Just like as Xavier's coolest name ever.
Yeah.
And he was a very clever, probably is now. He's got to be well into his 90s. But I tell you, he was just like the Energizer Bunny, kept going. And when he finally retired, he took his machine shop up to Maine with him. Who knows why? So he's always working on a project. So he came up with this during the oil embargo of 1973. The concept first hit him, and he made about a dozen of them. And I didn't realize that until someone from Maine who had one and was also a machinist, so he kept it going, she sent me some photos. And it was impressive, but there were a lot more moving parts, so it cost a bit to make. So Frank kind of redesigned it and simplified it after the first dozen, and it's pretty much hasn't changed since in any significant form. So he was a machinist and came up with this idea. As I said, he's always got a lot of projects on his mind, but this thing was just perfect for its simplicity once he got it nailed down. And I think the first one of this design hit around 1978. He did up to 600, I think, at his peak per year. And then we picked it up in 1991. He was actually selling something else, and my dad was looking for a kind of a retirement business as he had gotten out of construction, but he still wanted to do something on the side. And went up to see what Frank was selling, and he saw the super split. I always wondered if that was just the hook Frank threw out there, but I can't imagine he wasn't interested in selling the super split at that point, because that year he had only done 60 machines. I think he just lost interest in it, and he liked to invent things more than he liked to actually produce and run the business. Never really knew why he was let it go down that low. But we took it over, and little by little tried to build it back up, and it was a struggle at first. As I said, 91 was before the internet, so all our advertising was done via trade shows and print magazine. So that can get expensive, monthly payment, and at 60 machines a year, it wasn't barely or not even breaking even. So we got up to 100 machines or so pretty quickly. But it was still a struggle. So in 1997, I was in the steel erecting business, by the way, at this time. So I basically worked nights and weekends doing all the welding for him. My brother-in-law did all the assembly. My father did most of the sales work. And his niece was the bookkeeper. So it's always been kind of a family affair. But in 97, he had medical issues. I took it over with my brother-in-law, and just the two of us kept it going until, say, 2002. And at that point, I moved it into its current location. My brother-in-law moved to Canada, which really killed me. Never forgiven my sister for that. And so since then, it has year by year grown to, I don't know what the percentage is, but our biggest year was 400 splitters. But we've always sold more every single year, and I stopped advertising about 25 years ago once we got a website up there. And, basically sold by word of mouth and customers putting their videos up on YouTube.
So where are these splitters going? Are they mostly in the Northeast, in New England area, or are these? Where do you sell?
I'd say originally. Pennsylvania has always been really big for us, and New Hampshire, despite its size, has probably been the biggest. And that was when trade shows were easier to do in New England. So historically, yes. Not any longer, though. We sell all over the country. Number of them go to Alaska. Sold a couple overseas early on, but then I, you know, just didn't want to get into the legalities of that. It's gotten more difficult, and you know, we don't have warranty issues. But you know, if you did and it's overseas, you have to set up a dealer and all that. So we just never wanted to get into that. I looked into it at one point, and also the amount you have to produce at one time would you know just require more of a gearing up that I wanted to do. But as far as this country, I'm amazed at, you know, where we sell a lot to the south, all down the Appalachians, and quite a few people use it to split. In Texas, it's big on barbecue. So, you know, it always amazes me where people split wood. I sold the one of the ones to overseas was to Saudi Arabia.
They're splitting wood in Saudi Arabia? What are they doing over there?
I don't know. Never heard back from them, but the credit card was good, so we shipped it.
No kidding.
Where's the, I guess Saudi Arabia maybe, but where's the strangest place you've ever sold one?
Yeah, other than that, to an Amish fella who, it's a true one-horsepower splitter. He makes a PTO takeoff. If you put a horse on an incline, it's like a treadmill. And you lift it up, the weight of the horse makes the treadmill start to slide back, and the horse doesn't like that, starts walking. I mean, sure, they have it tethered, too, but just be, you know, it's always going to keep plodding. So that is the power source for PTO.
Get out of town.
So he hooked the super split. If you go on YouTube, there's a video of it.
That's amazing.
So being Amish, you know, they don't use engines or certain, you know, sects don't. So... they can power a lot of stuff off this one horsepower PTO.
So why do you think, I never even heard about it until one of our members, he's in his 80s, and he was telling me if he had to get a splitter again, he already had a hydraulic, he would get one of these mechanical splitters. And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. So how come it isn't as well known?
Well, I mean, from my end, I stopped advertising because it was too much of an expense, really, because we would do trade shows. And my dad tried to make a pig fly. He wanted to, you know, kind of make it take off like a rocket ship because he was getting older. And that's one of the reasons he spent so much money advertising. Well, everybody was very impressed with the machine, all the trade shows we did and everything else, but you know, not everybody wants a log splitter. Or they already have one that Uncle Joe built or whatever, you know. So,
right.
Our main market was folks in the tree business because they were almost stuck in the wood business or it was a good side business when times are slow. And they had to get rid of the wood. Most tree guys would rather be doing tree work than handling firewood because it's still a pretty tough racket. It's all material handling. I've stayed small as far as my overhead and all that, so I didn't need to sell a ton of them. And so it was basically like advertising. Even now, the patent ran out. I can't remember when, but I used to worry about it running out, but probably about 5 years went by and, you know, still nothing. And that was probably because I wasn't advertising and it was a not well-known product. But eventually, I think DR was the first one to get wind of it and copy it. And since then, there's been quite a few. And those folks are now, you know, doing a lot of advertising. DR is very good at marketing. And so the market now for kinetic splitters is greater. And, you know, I'm almost surprised you hadn't heard of it through the efforts of DR and Split Second and other companies that have copied it. Fortunately, most of them, just don't make as quality a product as we do. Split Second made a pretty good one. They copied us very accurately, and they did it for 3 to 5 years. I think it might have been 5 at the most, and then they got out of it. So I'm not sure why, but they make a lot of other products, too, in the agricultural business, so they didn't have to keep making splitters. But this is our one and only product, so you know, we've been doing it for so long, and that's one of our selling points, is, you know, 20 years, 30 years from now, you need a part for this thing, you'll still be able to get it. I mean, some people are amazed. They, you know, have one from the 70s, and they're wondering if there's anywhere they can get parts.
How is demand for them? Like, has it gone up or down, or have you noticed trends in the last 20, 30 years as far as people burning firewood and whatnot?
Not really. The one thing I have learned is that it's always going to be a pretty good-sized amount of people that burn wood.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, even with the price of oil going down, they don't get out of it. In 73, when he made it, you know, a lot of people might do a knee-jerk reaction and get into it. But it's usually wood stoves they're going to buy. They're not necessarily going to buy a log splitter. They might buy the wood. But that's, you know, especially now, price of wood's gone up quite a bit in the last, you know, 20 years. So I think a lot of people are buying wood, willing to buy the splitter because they can kind of see it paying for itself. And they also like the fact that the thing's so fast. I was talking to someone the other day, and he said, you know, I just love going out there and splitting wood. It's one of the things I tell people on the phone is this thing almost makes splitting wood fun.
Yeah. How much?
Still a lot of work.
You know, the highest cord I've ever seen, fuel wood, is out in eastern Massachusetts. How much are you guys selling a cord for out there, are you seeing?
I was looking at someone's website today, and a full cord of... a lot of people do a kiln dried, which is a good idea because if you're selling to high-end homes, they want to make sure there are no bugs in it. If you're going to sell to restaurants, you should, by law, having kiln dried wood. And that was $5.25 a cord.
Whoa. Are you serious?
Seasoned, it would be, I'm assuming that's a full cord, but seasoned, it would be around 300, give or take, depending upon the location. You know, if you're in the higher-end suburbs, it's going to crack 300.
Yeah.
The further out you get, it gets down to 200 somewhere. But I haven't seen anything under 250 in a long time.
Yeah, come out here then. It's 200 pretty much anywhere if you look hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're a lot more rural, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a big difference if you're in the burbs.
Yeah. I saw in Rockport, Massachusetts, it was 375 a cord, and that was about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that might have been some kiln dried, which, you know, if you're going to somebody's nice home, you know, that's something they almost insist on.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is Super Splitter, the original kinetic log splitter, with owner Paul McCann. He's calling from Bridgewater, Massachusetts, or what is that again?
West Bridgewater.
West Bridgewater. I knew there was something there.
So
how does this thing work, a kinetic log splitter?
You have two flywheels. Originally, they were 75 pounds, twin flywheels, and they rotate on an inch-and-a-half pinion gear. Anyone not familiar with a pinion gear? It's an inch-and-a-half-inch alloy heat-treated steel with teeth cut in the middle. I'd say the middle 5 inches, been years since I've measured it, but about that much. And on either side, the shaft is solid where the flywheels sit. And that rotates at full speed at 300 RPM, driven by either a gas motor or an electric.
Or a horse.
Works very well with electric, but we'll get into that later, I guess. Instead of a piston pushing the log through the wedge, it has a rack gear, which is a 2-inch wide by 1-inch thick alloy heat-treated steel with teeth on the bottom, so that rides on top of the pinion gear, and it's spring-loaded with, imagine a valve spring sitting on a little bearing, and that lifts the rack gear up so it's clear of the pinion, and there are two other springs that wrap around the end of the I-beam behind the motor, and that hooks on to the pusher end. There's some bearings right under where it contacts the wood and pushes it through. So it hooks on there. So those two springs are always trying to pull the rack back to the beginning point, and the valve spring is always trying to lift it up. So to engage it, you lift the handle up, and a simple cam lock mechanism pushes and locks the rack gear down into the spinning pinion gear. It immediately heads out at approximately 1 foot per second. impacts the wood and pushes it through the wedge. At the end of the cycle, there's a bevel on the rack gear. It automatically disengages and returns because of the two springs lifting the rack up and back off the pinion. So, you know, the main, about the only moving part on the whole machine is that cam lock that pivots 90 degrees every time you lift the handle up. So that's one of the reasons the thing lasts a darn long. There's not a lot of moving parts to wear out. You know, for some reason, it is a tough enough piece of wood to supply enough resistance to stall the flywheels. Then you tap the handle down, and as soon as you do that, the rack gear comes up and comes back.
You sound like you've explained this before.
Yeah, in my sleep.
John, what do you think? You're a mechanical guy.
I'd have to see it drawn out or something, but that sounds fascinating how it's put together. Very well thought out. Very smart person put that together. But it's so simple.
Frank was clever. That's the thing. It's incredibly simple.
Yeah.
People are looking at it when they first see it, and they imagine it has to be a lot more to it to make it work so well. The trick is it has to be made, you know, with very tight tolerances and very high quality material. That's, you know, the main thing that we do better, I think, than anyone else.
So how do forces compare to, say, a hydraulic splitter? I know a lot of people can you know, they go looking, they might see something in the 15 to 35 ton range and might find that familiar in a hydraulic splitter.
Yes, I'm asked that quite often, you know, what's the tonnage and all that, and I tell them we don't like to even talk about tonnage because a hydraulic starts at zero, impacts the wood, and slowly starts to build up as the wood supplies resistance to its maximum tonnage. So it either has enough to split it, which it usually would, but if it doesn't, it's not going to be any stronger the next time it comes out. So then you're cutting or pounding the piece of wood off the wedge. This machine will impact the wood with the full tonnage behind it, so that's why it's so efficient. It'll take 16 tons of pressure and do the work of a 30-ton hydraulic. The wedge is sharp and narrow, and it's only 6 inches tall, which some people don't like, but one thing Frank Graney told me when I first started making these things, asked him about it, he said, don't mess with the wedge. So he did a lot of research and experimenting to get the wedge right. One fella just wanted me to put on a 12-inch wedge for it. You know, we wanted to buy a machine. I said, no, I'll give you another wedge if you want to add it onto it, but it's it'll have too much leverage, and it could actually cause the I-beam to fail at the end. You know, start to crumple or something. You know, you're getting a long enough lever, you can break anything. So, and it also, it's a minimal surface area, so there's less resistance for the wood. The downside to it, when you're splitting big wood, is that you can push a big piece of wood through the wedge and, you know, it doesn't burst open. A lot of the hydraulic machines, the wedge gets really fat really soon because they have all this raw power, so it basically bursts the log open, and that's something that the kinetics can't, you know, really do or shouldn't. Some of the knockoffs I've seen from overseas, you know, they do that, and they got their flywheels running real fast. So it hits the wood a lot faster, and it, you know, makes it look really impressive, but in their videos they have easy wood. And, mm-hmm. you know, you get something tough on there, and it's not going to pop open like the stuff there. And with a flywheel spinning as fast as they have them, they just tear themselves up.
So what about safety, you know, because people might be wondering if it's hitting it that fast. How safe is the machine?
Well, it comes out of 1 foot per second. I do tell people, you know, to run at half throttle, which quite a few people do. You know, if you have relatively easy straight-grained, you know, hardwood, you don't need to throttle it out. It'll do a fine job at half throttle. So it comes out a little slow. It still returns at the same, you know, speed of a second or less. So that's where its claim to fame is. You know, the machine's always waiting for the operator to put the next log in place,
yeah,
as opposed to watching a hydraulic cylinder come back. So that helps. But even at 2 feet per second, it's not as fast as it might sound. So I keep one hand by the handle at all times because, you know, I want to be ready to engage it and take advantage of the speed. And the other hand, you should put the log on the wedge, the log on the nest, push it into the wedge. The wedge will actually hold it, and then you can, you know, keep that other hand out of the way. On a bigger piece, if I don't let go of the piece of wood, I make sure my hand's always on the top of it. You know, the danger is at both ends. But the main safety thing in this thing is that we have stickers on it that say one person operation.
Okay.
So I tell people I always know where my left hand is. It's at the end of my wrist. I don't have to watch it to know where it is. But I don't know where your hands are. If you're helping me, you know, you're slowing me down.
Right.
And so I've never heard of an accident. When I used to do trade shows, you know, somebody might hold up nine fingers or something like I did once. I said, it was one of these. He goes, no, hydraulic. But regardless, even with the hydraulic, there were two people running it. So even a slow hydraulic, by the time you say, ow, it's too late.
Hmm.
So I've never heard of an accident that didn't involve two people.
Yeah, it's more akin to someone who splits, you know, wood by hand. It's more breaks the wood in the same way, right? Except this is obviously by a lot more power.
Yeah, yeah. You can't push them all through a piece of wood, but you put it on a stick and swing it. And, you know, you have enough power to do it. So it's the same principle of the kinetic energy stored in the flywheels.
And the maintenance and the durability?
Durability is legendary because the hardest thing it does is stop itself. You know, the wood just supplies the resistance. And it's designed to do that. So if you think hydraulic, if you're running it through tough stuff, and it's going to max out its maximum tonnage, and if it can't get through, or even if it does, meanwhile, all that tonnage is kind of going backwards through the drivetrain. The engine's working harder, the pump's working harder, the hoses are getting more stress, you know, potential leaks. So, you know, they are kind of beating themselves up. I mean, anything wears out, so even my machine will, at some point, pay the price of, you know, really hard work like that. But, you know, because of its design, you know, it's the hardest thing it does is stop itself. And if you get, you know, used to it and you're, you know, a good operator, if I put a tough piece of wood on just from experience, I'm going to know that it might stall the flywheels. So I'll hit it, let it go about a third of the way in and tap the handle down. And I get to see, you know, kind of how to, what to expect on the next hit. Might take two or three hits. I did that with some elm that a fellow bought, a J model, which is a 75-pound machine. And he was local, called me up and said, it's not doing it. It's not working for me. So I asked him to bring it back and bring the wood in. He didn't even know he had elm. So I put the piece on. It's probably about a 16-inch diameter piece, and I didn't expect it to go through because elm's brutal.
Yeah.
And, you know, just put it on about 3 or 4 inches, tapped the handle, did it again, the third time it went through, and once it was split in half, quartering it went through on the first shot. So you have to be able to read the wood on the tougher pieces. You know, you really got to pick it apart, and it'll pick anything apart. But
yeah,
if you just put a really brutal piece of wood on there and all these knots or wires and not think about it, then, yeah, that's, you know, it's kind of being abusive.
I'm still using the Armstrong 1981 wood splitter, but John, what do you think about hydraulics? What kind of problems do they have that you've noticed?
Well, I mean, it depends on their build, really. Engines wear out. There's no doubt about that. All of a sudden, you won't have the power, and that could be sudden or that could be prolonged over time, depending on your maintenance. What we just talked about, you know, you have the maintenance and the hoses. Hoses don't last forever. That really goes back down to how you treated them and whether you're storing it outside or inside. And if you're changing your oil, if there's a filter in there and inside that hydraulic filter, what's going on? So there's really a lot you got to think about. And if you're just taking it out once a year to split a half a quart of wood and you're putting it back in the shed, then you got other issues. Maybe, you know, maybe there's engine issues from not running enough. So there's things to think about a lot.
Yeah, when it comes to hydraulics, talking to my customers, I tell them, you get what you pay for. You know, the design on them all is pretty much identical. But, you know, you get a Timberwolf, which is a great machine, and you can pay over $10,000 for their, you know, top of the line. It's got a adjustable four-way wedge and the log lift and all that, but, you know, you can get a $1,300-$1,400 hydraulic at Home Depot. And, you know, for the first couple of weeks, they're going to seem to be pretty comparable. But, you know, the Timberwolves really hold up. A lot of my customers have that machine or a similar one. There are a couple other manufacturers. I'm not really that knowledgeable about the hydraulic group, but I happen to run into one at that, I think I mentioned that website, Outdoor with the Morgans. I can't remember the line of hydraulics they had, but they were very nice, and I checked out the prices, and, yeah, they started at over $5,000 and went up from there. So,
where does the Super Splitter fall into the line of price?
The J model with the production table, which some people buy without it and make their own just, you know, to save money or they want to make one to their specs, is $2,800 plus freight. Then you have the heavy duty, which is 90-pound flywheels versus 75, and that's about $400 more. It also has a different design on the pusher assembly, which has some advantages and possible disadvantage. Well, something I didn't care for, but if you keep the machine clean, it doesn't make any difference. And then we have the special edition, and that came out in the very early 80s after the original J model with 100-pound flywheels. And that has that was designed for all the large elms coming down from Dutch elm disease. The arborist needed something with more juice than the J model. And what it really has, besides the flywheels, is back then it was a 7-horse. Now, because the Honda's just upgrades, it's now a 9-horse with a 2-to-1 gear reduction on it. So that machine is designed to muscle in when that tough piece of elm starts to slow the flywheels down. And, you know, you're thinking the flywheels are going to stall, and you hear that motor kind of dog down and muscle through, and it takes a really tough piece of wood to stop that one.
Well, we're going to take a break for a second, Paul, but if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., and tonight's topic is Super Splitter, the original kinetic log splitter with owner Paul McCann. We're going to ask him next about more about these various models.
The cinema and leave you in a wimpy bar. You tell me that we've gone too far. Come running up to me. Make the scene at Cousin Jack's. Leave him to put the bottles back. Mends his glasses that are cracked. Well, that's one up to me. Hey. Cloud to ride, pack the tennis club inside. Trouser cuffs hung far too wide. Well, it was up to me. Tires down on your bicycle, your nose feels like an icicle. The yellow fingered smoky girl is looking up to me. Yeah. Common working man, with a half of bitter bread and jam. And if it pleases me, I'll put one on your fan when the copper fades away. Is season comes to pass, the Diggle Pirate sings at last. And if I laughed a bit too fast, well, it was up to me. Take you to the cinema and leave you in a wimpy bar. You tell me that we've gone too far, come running up to me. Hey.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is Super Splitter, the original kinetic log splitter with owner Paul McCann. So, Paul, I was combing over your website, and I guess it still is a pretty family-owned business, huh? Your son is the production manager?
Yes. Yes, he's he went to business school, and I probably should have had my sons out in my shop earlier. My wife didn't want me to, you know, push them into something they didn't want to do. She wanted them to go to college and blah, blah, blah. So the oldest one is a software engineer. But even he did spend some time here, but just wasn't his thing. Connor, after a couple of years of business school, started to, you know, come around and think this might be a really good thing. Because, you know, not many people get the opportunity to walk into an existing, you know, business like this. So at that point, we decided to try that, and it's worked out very well. Maureen has kind of morphed into the office manager, as we had five kids, and now they're pretty much out the door. So, and she was a stay-at-home mom, and kids were in Christian school, so she was pretty busy between carting them around and everything else.
Yeah, five kids, huh?
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
Well, the last surprise were twins, so it wasn't really planned that way.
But
wouldn't have changed anything, except for the college bills, right. But it was a lot of fun.
So do you have any other employees in the shop or anything, or is it mainly you?
Connor had one for a while. 2016 was our busiest year, and I don't know if it was because of the knockoffs that hit the market. I'm sure that had something to do with it, or, you know, I've never really seen a definite trend as to why, you know, sales might go up or down. But following that, the next year we actually went down a little bit. That was the first time ever. And each year it's dropped a couple, but it's basically hovering around the same amount every year now. Right now, it's certainly a little bit slower because of the virus. I don't think a lot of people are spending money they don't have to spend, and spring's our slow time anyhow. But so he's basically handling the assembly and shipping by himself with my help, and my other son Tristan. Occasionally, if he gets really busy, he'll come in. Tristan is just finished up college, so he's kind of looking for the job in his field, and which is hard to come by right now. So he's got part-time jobs and works weekends here. The other location where Super Splitter was originally moved into in 2002 is within walking distance of here, and that's still the machine shop where we make all the components, and that's basically where I stay. And so I have an employee there, and we can easily, with two of us, you know, make everything we need and keep Connor supplied. And then if he needs help, I can come over and work with him.
Yeah, so let's go over. I mean, you make all the parts and stuff there? And if so, how long does it take you to assemble one?
Well, I can assemble one less than an hour, but it's making all the parts. I'm still actually trying to improve that and come up with it's less than a day. I know that, but I don't have an exact, which I should at this point, have it down to the minute. But,
yeah.
You know, over the years, too, I've invested in better equipment and more efficient equipment, so I'm trying to get better and better, make things in larger quantities to get the cost down. But it's always been a battle. I'd say our biggest problem over the years has been the flywheels. We have these locally cast and locally machined. But the fellow that has done the machining for all these years, he finally retired and sold it to another fellow who was, you know, has been great to me and the company. He used to make all the components, and he'd stockpile them. And, you know, as we needed, we'd go buy them, you know, 20, 50 at a time of whatever part we needed. It was great. And he also makes the Moser Titleist golf balls. So, naturally, I am not the biggest fish in his pond. But he had trouble finding people to do the flywheels as far as employees because he didn't have a crane system. It was very old equipment from the original guy. And his main guy pulled a muscle or something, so it was always a bottleneck every fall. I mean, he kept doing them, but it was just pulling teeth. So I finally convinced him to sell me that equipment, and because he basically said he couldn't do it anymore. He couldn't find the help. So that's been something that I spent most of the summer doing, was dragging that stuff over here and getting it set up. So now we're machining the flywheels in-house as well. There isn't, other than that, there's not too much we don't do in-house except for the rack and pinion itself. We have a gear company doing that.
So, Paul, that guy who made the flywheels also made Titleist golf balls?
He makes the molds for Titleist golf balls. I mean, there's a couple of phases. So he does the initial step. I think Titleist people, they have plants in a couple of places around the country, but one of them is just a couple of towns over. And they make the mold that actually puts the dimples in. But, yeah, it's pretty funny. I know at one point they actually went overseas to get the molds made. And then it was, you know, a real chuckle for Harry, it was Harry's mold of machine. And, you know, they asked him if they could fix the molds. Well, serve them right.
So besides the, you know, machining the parts, what's some other challenges of running a business such as this?
Well, employees has been, you know, challenging. It's a challenge for just about anybody who manufactures things. But we manufacture one thing. So it, you know, it can get a little tedious. That's one thing I'd like to do in the other shop is start being more of a, you know, open welding machine shop. But we're not really, I'm not a machinist. I know enough to do what we need to do, and I love to learn and figure stuff out, but I don't have time to really become an expert. I don't have the equipment to be an expert. We have what we need. And the welding, when you're just welding the same parts all the time, you know, it's hard to keep guys in. So for years, it was teach someone how to do it, and then, you know, they're going to get a better job offer maybe or something more interesting, and then you got to train the next guy. Mm. And quality is critical, particularly welding the wedges on. And, you know, if a wedge comes off a log splitter, it's really not much good. So that rarely happened, but it was always a concern of mine. So one of the first pieces of equipment I bought was a robotic welder. And that has really been great because, you know, it shows up every day and it's, you know, it does exactly what you tell it to. And when I first got it, that was a problem at first. But once I learned how to speak a robot a little better, it's been a wonderful. So it's still same thing every day as far as, not every day, but, you know, we'll do 500 pieces here and then, you know, maybe a couple hundred of something else. And, you know, even I get kind of, you know, I don't want to say bored with it, but, you know, I don't look forward to grinding out, you know, side guides for 3 days. So, but what I usually do in those instances, too, we're working on a log lift for the machine. And I have a small list of projects and add-ons or improvements or ideas that I'd like to work on. So that kind of keeps it interesting, which is important.
Are you the main end of the R&D in this business?
Or is... Yeah, and that's the other thing. So finding I'd love to find that guy who loves to self-starter, who, you know, really likes to figure things out. My brother-in-law was like that. He's a little older than me, though, but he, you know, there wasn't a problem he couldn't solve. And
is that the guy that went to Canada?
Yeah. My sister left him and he married a Canadian.
Why'd he go back? What's the deal? What happened?
He married a Canadian girl my sister left him. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah, he was. My kids still think Uncle Dan is Uncle Dan. And, you know. But he was a great guy. He is a great guy, but yeah. You know, it's nice you have someone. I've been blessed to have a few employees, not only in this business but in the other one, that you can, you know, 100% count on to, you know, give you everything they got, and they had extraordinary ability. So if you know anyone like that in this area, send them my way.
No, likewise.
Yeah, sure. We get that complaint all the time. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is Super Splitter, the original kinetic log splitter, with owner Paul McCann from West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. 30 miles south of Boston, right?
Correct.
All right, here we go. Okay, so gas versus electric, advantages and disadvantages.
All right, well, most of the sales are gas because of the portability. That's what the vast majority of our customers want. But the electric is fantastic because it's quiet. And as far as the and the disadvantage would be, it's not very portable. You could always drag a generator with you, but you may as well have, you know, the gas motor on the machine. If you want both, I tell people to buy it with the gas. And then you can always find an electric motor at a yard sale or something pretty cheap. It's a very common 56H NEMA frame motor. And you just need a base plate, different size pulley, and a different size belt. You can pop the engines off and swap them very easily. I used to do trade shows with the electric. And, you know, that was back in the day. So I'd be in this little 10x10 booth. And would go out to I'd back up to the loading dock with a truck full of wood, bring it in with a hand dolly, and one load at a time, and the machine would be sitting there running, but the hum of the trade show, you wouldn't even know it. You know, until somebody would be talking to me, I'd put a piece of wood up there and lift the handle, and they'd jump backwards. They had no idea the thing was working. And it was a very impressive demonstration. Nowadays, that's not really feasible because of the insurance regs. You know, there's no way they're going to let you split wood inside and all that. But that was a lot of fun to be able to actually demonstrate it in person. Downside to the electric, if you hit a tough piece of wood and it stalls the flywheels real fast, it'll drag the electric motor down to a halt. And, you know, that's not good to do repeatedly to an electric motor. So the operator kind of has to be on the ball and tap the handle down as soon as the flywheels start to stall. A gas engine with maybe, I don't know, 5% of the wood that you put on that might have stalled an electric, it'll torque down a little bit and possibly get through it. But if it's a tough enough piece of wood, even the gas is going to, you know, stall. It's not designed to raw power through it. Unless you got that special edition with the 2-to-1 gear reduction. So the trick is tap the handle down as soon as you think they're going to stall. And it doesn't really matter what you have on there for a motor. It works just about as well.
Who's your main clientele you find buying these splitters?
I'd say it's almost 50-50, homeowners, commercial. It used to be, you know, 90-10 with the Arborist being our number one customers because they're stuck in the wood business. But now with the internet, more and more people see it. You know, we get a lot of garden centers or you know, people that are splitting wood you know, for other reasons, sugar maple places that are you know, processing maple syrup. They split their own wood. A lot of places, you know, like resorts. I tried to sell one up at the the Sound of Music, the Von Trapp Lodge up in Vermont. If you've ever heard of it or been there, it's really nice. And so they supply wood to all of their condos and stuff that they have up there now, and places like that will buy it once they couldn't get a sale there. But you know, I'm always amazed at the customers. One fellow says he burns about, you know, 3/4 a year, but he loves the looks of the machine. He's trying to figure out how he can justify buying it. I told him Father's Day is coming up.
Yeah, I just see a lot of people around here would want it in the Catskills. It just seems simpler and, I don't know, and faster and less maintenance. And the maintenance, you know, from your website, it's really about the I-beam, right? Maintaining the cleanliness of the I-beam?
Yes, and making sure the bearings are rolling. So the number one complaint, two complaints mainly, is, you know, as far as the most common we get. One is that the, and they kind of tie in together. One is a small roller bearing, used to be 3/4 of an inch in diameter. We've increased that to 7/8, and we cut the top of the cage that it is held in open so you could spray it easier, and that's been an improvement. That rolls on top of the I-beam, and the valve spring that lifts the rack gear up sits on top of that. And it gets, if you ignore it, it's going to get gummed up, get dirty, it might stop rolling. Or, especially with the homeowners, they stick it in the garage for a while, or the commercial guys just leave it outside, might throw a tarp over it. Some of them have really tough lives, so they might get some moisture in there. And if it sits for a while, it's a little bit of rust, so they start using it, and the roller's not rolling. It'll still work, might not return as quickly, sometimes not at all, but you know, a lot of the guys just stretch the spring out to make the pullback stronger instead of solving the problem of the fact that they have some resistance there. So in a short order, you wind up wearing a flat spot in that bearing. I mean, I've seen machines that have, you know, well over 1/8 of an inch groove worn in the center of the I-beam because of that thing, the bearing not rolling, and they keep using it anyhow. I saw one come in for repair, and the bearing was literally worn right in half. Well, it tells you how many times they must have cycled it with the thing not running. I jokingly say there's only one thing that can kill a super splitter, and that's an employee. The tree business is rough, the outdoors business. But so that bearing is something you have to keep an eye on. And I keep a can of WD or PB Blast or something like that handy. And every time I take a breather, I shoot that bearing. I'll also shoot between the I-beam and the two side guides that run down the side that hold the rack, you know, centered. Because there's a bearing or two under there, and I'll spray between the crack to get some lube in those. And then I'll spray the top of the rack, top of the I-beam, and wipe it all down. I kind of use that as a cleaning agent. And if you do that, you know, that's about it for maintenance. You can put a couple of squirts of grease in the main bearings that the flywheels rotate on once or twice a year. And the rack itself should be greased, so about a tablespoon of grease in there every, 20-50 quarts. I mean, I don't use the machines that often except at trade shows and when I'm, you know, splitting some buddy's wood up, but and occasionally my own, but I just burn wood in the fireplace, so I don't go through a whole lot. So, I'm not the best to figure out, you know, if I use them nonstop, I'd know when it starts to run out of grease. You just feel under the rack here. And if your hand doesn't come with a little bit of grease on it, you might want to add a little bit. But you don't want to go crazy with it because the grease will attract sawdust and dirt and all that. So it's like a dirt magnet.
So we're running out of time here. Only got about 2 minutes left on From the Forest. Tonight's topic has been Super Splitter, the original kinetic log splitter with owner Paul McCann. And so there are knockoffs out there that are copycatting your product?
Yes, and I sell those, people that buy those, I sell quite a few of them. They're second kinetic.
Because
the one they buy doesn't hold up. I mean, there are some that are under $1,000, and they're small, and they're, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I don't know how well they're selling, but I do know that the Wood Wolf is no longer being made, the Speco is no longer being made, and the Split Second is no longer being made. And the original DR model is no longer being made. So all of those were, except for the Split Second, the other ones just weren't made well. And that's similar to hydraulics. You get what you pay for.
Yeah.
They're not hurting me as much or at all, really. I don't know why our sales, you know, we're stepping up our marketing a little bit or trying to, but you know, it's not my best skill set, so Connor is going to take that into the future, I hope, and you know, we don't really have to, but I would like to see it grow. You know, the fact that it grows a few percent every year was great. You know, I don't want to be caught short or, you know, down the road. So you never know. A lot of people just compare with price, but for the most part, our people are incredibly loyal, and so many people buy just based on what they see online from people that have owned this machine for, you know, 30-plus years.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on tonight, Paul. We're out of time here, but we really appreciate you taking the time and explaining Super Splitter.
It was my pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll get in touch with you a little bit later because I got some other vendors, people that I deal with that I think would be a good fit for you on the show as well.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, and have a good night.
Take care, Ryan. Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. If you just missed that, that was Super Splitter, Inc., the original kinetic log splitter, and the owner, Paul McCann, out of West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Pretty cool, huh, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get my hands on one and try it out because it sounds like it's much faster and much more efficient for splitting wood.
Absolutely. But that's all the time we have on From the Forest. And is it next week, Gary Mead?
Gary Mead, third Wednesday.
Gary Mead, third Wednesday. All right, see you then. Take care. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Fashion and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river